But even though you were in the Navy, you transferred to the Marines. What happened there?
Well, I don't know. Willie Paul, who was one of my closest friends, and Lee Jenkins and I were in NROTC and going on summer cruises, and we became a little bit disenchanted with shipboard life. It just was pretty confining, and it just didn't work out. So we started talking about transferring over and taking our commission in the Marine Corps, which you could do. But we waited until it was a little bit late to make the regular transfer. But after our third cruise, we decided we wanted to go in the Marine Corps. We talked with our executive officer, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Russell, and he wanted us to transfer primarily because Willie Paul was kind of the commandant of the NROTC program. We debated and debated and agreed and disagreed, and then we decided we weren't going to go unless we all went. And then one day I just sort of got tired of waiting, and I went over and signed up to transfer to the Marine Corps. Then I told Jenkins and Willie Paul, Bill Paul, we call him Willie, that I had done so, and they weren't sure they believed me, but they went on over and signed. They tried to get Colonel Russell to tell them, and he wouldn't tell them because he didn't want them to sign up just because I had. They signed, and when they came out of there, I had printed a big placard that said, "Jenkins and Paul are fools. West hasn't signed." And they were really, really pretty disturbed. They attacked me verbally and physically, and Colonel Russell had to come out and assure them that I had indeed signed. We've laughed about that often since then. As you know, Bill Paul later became president of the American Bar Association, an extremely successful lawyer, general counsel up at Bartlesville for Conoco, and has had a very distinguished career in the law. Jenkins later become vice president of Shearing Plow Corporation in Memphis. So they've had great, successful careers.
Well, you graduated, you were commissioned in the Marines, and you were married August 29th, 1952.
That's right, while I was in Quantico.
You head to Japan, and then you asked to be transferred to Korea.
Right.
And you got an early out, and then you went back to law school.
That's right, in 54.
You had a summer internship at that time. Tell us about that.
That was a summer intern program with Gulf Oil Corporation to see what it was like in a general counsel's office in Tulsa, or worked in Tulsa that summer. They provided me an office and treated me very, very well.
With your name on the door.
A name on the door, and I was very, very impressed with that. First office I'd ever had with my name on the door.
You graduate in May of 1956. You join a law firm in Ada.
I joined the law firm of former Justice Oral Busby, who had been on the Supreme Court and had ran for the U.S. Senate, and Virgil Stanfield and Austin Deaton, Jr., who was 2 or 3 years older than I was. And I replaced David Busby in the firm, who had gone with Mike Monroney to Washington, D.C., who was then the senator.
Then along about in here, you have 2 children.
Actually, we had 4 children. 2 of them were born prematurely and did not survive. 2 sons, twin sons. And then we had 2 daughters, Kimberly, who is now a magistrate judge in Muskogee, and Jennifer Lee. She's in the collection business in Tulsa. She works on debts and persuading people to pay their debts and so forth. And I have 1 granddaughter. Her daughter is nearly a 25-year-old young woman in California now named Mary Ellis Passy.
Back then you established a horse ranch.
Barshoe Ranch.
Barshoe Ranch. You met Ralph Evans.
Ralph Fireball Evans is probably the most notorious character that I have ever become involved with. He did everything. He coached. He taught. He had a candy store. He ran a lending agency, taught Spanish, and lived in Mexico for a while. And he and I were just close friends that got involved in a number of absolutely outrageous practical jokes. We kidnapped a U.S. Marshal on one occasion, Bill Broderick, and took him to Raton, New Mexico. We had a horse out there that we were going to bring back. So we drove by his house, Bill Broderick. He's having a drink with his wife on the patio, and we invited him to go with us and let him call home when we got to Sayre. And he attempted to explain to Emma Joyce that he'd been kidnapped, which she did not believe at all. But at any rate, We took him all the way to Raton, spent 2 days, and brought him back, but he never did convince Emma Joyce that we had actually kidnapped, which we had.
You took on a criminal defense case, and you defended a man by the name of Lonnie Pointer.
Lonnie Pointer was a common crook. He and two other guys robbed a grocery store in Ada. They attempted to blow open the safe, which they did, but they burned the building down in getting that done. So I represented Painter, and he agreed to testify against the other defendants in exchange for not being imprisoned himself. Plea bargaining, of course. First, they brought him back from Tulsa. They arrested all three of them in Tulsa. They brought him back, and their forensic evidence showed that when he got back to Ada, he had shoes that had mud that the expert testified came from the alley behind that building that had burned. This was during preliminary hearing. I had to try to establish that he'd gotten the mud on his feet from some other source. So our friend Bill Broderick, the marshal who we had kidnapped, we had seen him on that day. The assistant district attorney was Jim Gasway, and he and I were driving to Oklahoma City, and we drove by Bill Broderick having a snowball fight out on the side of the road with the highway department employees just that morning. Then later, they were at the preliminary hearing, they presented this evidence that Painter had mud on his shoes from Ada, from Pontotoc County, and that Bill Broderick had transported him back to Ada on that same day that we saw him out there. I cross-examined the sheriff, who was a good friend of mine, at length about whether he had been anywhere that he could have gotten some mud on his shoes, and then later into his car where Painter could have gotten in. Of course, he denied it vigorously, and I'm sure in good faith. But after I got him to deny it a number of times, I asked him if he remembered having a snowball fight out on the side of the road with the people. I said, if your memory has failed you, and I'm sure it has, I'll put the assistant district attorney, Mr. Jim Gasway, on the stand and let him help refresh your memory, because he was with me when we drove by. And, of course, they very quickly offered us a plea bargain deal so that we pled guilty and didn't have to go to prison. Bill was a little embarrassed about it, but he forgave me for it. Even guys that are honest and truthful, I found out in law enforcement, they'll sometimes forget pretty significant things when they're on the stand.
And selective forgetfulness.
Selective memory.
Yeah. Exactly. When you defended the criminal, did you ever think you wanted to be a defense attorney?
Well, I had had some experience in the Marine Corps as a defense counsel and court marshals. I did give some pretty serious thoughts about being, and of course in Ada, when you're practicing law with a small firm, you take almost any kind of business you can get. I mean, anything. I was comfortable. I was really a little more comfortable on the defense side than I would have been on the prosecution side.
Why?
Well, I don't know, and I'm afraid that that has followed me throughout my judicial career, is that I've been very sensitive, for some reason, to the fact that the defendant, who is usually overwhelmed by the state's resources and the federal government's resources in prosecuting his cases, they're often overwhelmed and outmatched, and you have to be especially vigilant to be sure that their rights have not been violated. And, of course, it hadn't got any better. There's a Brady rule that says that the government's supposed to provide them with any information that's hopeful or helpful to them as far as a defense. And that's, in my opinion, frequently violated. And so I've been a little bit more sensitive. Let me put it this way. I hope it's not being unfair. I've probably been a little more sensitive to the defense rights and defense's opportunities than have some of my colleagues. That was true on the state court and on the federal bench.